Okay.
Hollander.
Hollander. But I like the Hollander.
Philanthropy. That's where you give money to people who will never die. All right.
I am Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, chief metallurgist to King Charles V of Spain, and I'm at your service.
They've gone to plaid. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack. We mine the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, and this is the episode we like to call a new one. My name is Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight, Brian Cartoon Electricity Effects Dunaway.
Oh, nice. I'm glad everyone could attend this week's cast update for our little movie here. All right, good news, bad news times. We were not able to get Jean-Claude Van Damme as our lead, but we did land Christopher Lambert. He sounds like Van Damme and has the same angry eyebrows Russell wanted. I don't know what that means, but he has them.
So wait, Lambert or Lambert?
Lambert.
Can we decide now? Is it Lambert?
I say Lambert. Lambert. But also, before we get into that, we had landed Sean Connery.
Mm.
However, he only agreed to do the movie if he gets to dress the pimp. So there's that.
All right.
Now get out there and let's make a movie. Just remember, don't lose your head.
Okay, perfect. Also right, with us, Randy the Kurgan, Jordan.
Aloha, Brian. I'm just going to go over some song lyrics real quick here. So let's see. I am immortal. No, you aren't. You are long-lived and hard to kill, but those two properties are not synonymous with immortal. Mm. I have inside me blood of kings. No, you don't. No one with king's blood would dress up that funny. I have no rival. Of course you have rivals. You have rivals showing up trying to sword fight you every day. You're a big fat liar, Freddie Mercury.
Wow. Best Thank Freddie you, Mercury that's ever been tried to attempt on this show. That's pretty damn good. And one of my favorite things about the movie. Finally with us, Brian Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez Ibit.
Thank you. Hi, and thanks for calling the Acme Sword Company tech support line. How can I help you? Oh, yeah, you've got the Caliber 5000 model? Oh, excellent, yes. Yeah, that's the one that splits in half so you can put in a suitcase. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so what happens when you swing it too fast? Oh, I see. So was it your dog or was it somebody else's dog? Yeah, you could wrap our patented duct tape upgrade system around the blade. Sure. Would you like me to send you to our orders department?
I'm so glad someone called out that dumb two-piece sword.
I hated that crap.
Yeah, but the guy wielding it's still cool.
Yeah,
I just sure. I think it. It's worth mentioning that that is an actual thing. You can actually do that. Those have been fabricated.
Do they lock in? Or
yeah, they have a tongue lock that goes all the way down to the grip. Like
it's,
that's a.
It just
that's
seems a real less. Thing. It seems less effective.
It does. It
I just
does.
Want like there's somewhere out somebody. There. We've got a sword aficionado listener, and I just want him to. We yeah. It's
yeah. Send us your email.
Thing.
Go ahead.
It's a real thing. We just think it's dumb.
Well, you know what? Screw that guy.
This thing is so sharp. It can like you know cut through about 1,000 things he cut through. Uh-huh. How do you take it apart without cutting yourself? Like what do you?
The answer is you can't. That is
you
the
wear
answer.
Sticky gloves.
Well, if you're Clancy Brown, I almost called him Yancey Brown, which is not Yancey correct Brown. At all. Yeah. You can do whatever you want because you are a grade A bad A. So we're talking about Highlander, not the Highlander.
The Highlander.
Just Highlander. Thanks to Brian Dunaway for clearing that up before we started tonight. So I didn't screw that up. It is Highlander, and Scott Fletcher, as always, has something to say about it. It has been a very long time since we've seen this film. Let's let him do the honors.
Highlander. Director Russell Mulcahy's film became a paragon of modern action fantasy, giving rise to legions of warrior fans who follow the story of Connor McLeod, played by Christopher Lambert, one of the few surviving members of a clan of immortals who've been battling for centuries. The evil Kurgan, played by Clancy Brown, wants to kill a forlorn but determined Connor for good in modern-day New York. But an immortal mentor, played by Sean Connery, provides help in flashbacks.
Okay.
I just want to correct Scott real quick.
What?
It's been a while since Scott has seen the movie. I actually watched it today.
Oh, well, it's been a week since I saw it for this fine episode of Film Sack. But before that, probably back when it was still forbidden, it was on the list of forbidden films from my parents.
Yeah, why?
Wow. I therefore went and saw it. Well, you know what? All I can think of is this. There's no swearing in it, really. No. None, really. No F-bombs.
There's a sex scene, but they don't really show
it. Yeah, it's silhouette-y and weird. Yeah. What's her name? She's gross. She was like a third grade teacher or something. She's not attractive, guys. We have to agree on her.
Well, she's not typical starlet-y.
There's nobody attractive in this movie, period.
Oh,
this is an 80s movie.
I disagree.
I disagree as well. I think that here are the two attractive
young
people.
Scottish. Yeah.
Wouldn't you? Yeah, she's totally hot.
Yes.
I'll give you that one. Who's the other one? Who's the other one you're going to say?
I was only going to say one.
I was going to say Christopher Lambert is a dude holds up. He looks pretty good.
The second sexiest woman in the whole movie.
I thought I just saying I think he holds up and looks all right. Yes, Randy.
It's an 80s movie. There's nothing you can do about it. These guys were making a film at a time when films just looked awful and sounded awful. I mean, there's so many awful things in this movie that you gotta work past that, or you're just gonna regret the 2 hours you spent watching.
True, and I tried to do that pretty early, but I did think like the stuff set back in Scotland, which was a fair amount in this movie, was actually pretty good. That holds up. That looked good. You know?
Yeah.
The good movie.
I think visually.
The good film.
Yeah. What are you gonna say? Visually, what?
I think visually it's a good movie. I think there's a lot of great cinematography, and not just the stuff in Scotland. I think, some of the really cool backlit scenes, the scenes in his, Connor's curiosity, his sword, his antique shop. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really, really well done. And it's indicative of the director. I know we're going to talk about who he is and what he's done, but.
Right.
Fisher was the cinematographer behind this, and he does a really good job. Sometimes it felt like they just failed in some shots.
Like, but give me an example. Overall, like, what do you mean? Do you have something specific, like something that just jumped out at you? It was weird.
There was a lot of the city scenes that just were not lit properly. And I know it's so hard to light that stuff, but yeah, a lot of it was just uncomfortable. I'm like,
okay, well, no offense. I don't want to give any offense to Bob Anderson's memory, who just passed away. Legendary sword master. Responsible for sword choreography and all sorts of great films, including but not limited to Star Wars and other stuff. The guy is a genius. He's amazing. I will just say this about this movie. I don't think these people were good pupils to Bob Anderson's teaching. I think it was horrible sword play. Like
the garage scene, the garage fight.
Very bad. Ew. Very bad. Mm-hmm. And I'm not. Yeah. And again, it's. No offense to Bob Anderson, because I think the guy probably did the best he could, threw his hands up and walked out. Because whatever happened there, it was, maybe it was just badly directed. Maybe they didn't know how to do action back then. The Hong Kong thing hadn't really come and smacked us in the face yet. So we didn't really have some of that. But Randy said it fairly well, which is, hey, this is an 80s movie. And for a lot of 80s movies, especially stuff like this that was sleeper hit. I mean, people forget at the time, this was not a big hit at the box office. Did not make a ton of money.
Not in the U.S. it didn't.
No. Mm-hmm. Did okay overseas.
Yeah,
And then better here on VHS and other sort of things. But I guess that's the only thing we had. Didn't we with Laserdisc? I suppose maybe that did all right. but it's not. I understand the era, and I also understand the legacy of where swords fighting has gotten to today, and how amazing it is today. I mean, you don't choreograph sword fights without it looking pretty badass now.
Yeah,
it looked real bad.
Yeah,
real bad.
Yeah. And part of it was just bad. That's what I mean by uncomfortable shots, because some of the fight scenes that we're doing, I mean, you could film it from a different direction and it looked more convincing. But it seemed like they were either didn't position the actors in the right places, or this might, it was just didn't quite flow.
Yeah, there was something
weird. Didn't quite work.
Yeah. Russell Mulcahy, heir to the
the father Mulcahy
from MASH. Yeah, he directed this thing. He also did Highlander 2, and I guess, you know, can we all just agree now that Highlander 2 is probably maybe one of the worst sequels ever made?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
that's probably. Apparently, there's some version out there that he wasn't really happy with the way that the release, the theatrical release went, and he apparently has a director's version out there that takes out a lot of stuff, changes some things, but. Boy, I mean, reading about that, it still sounds like it's a pile of crap.
Yeah. And then three, we got Mario Van Peebles, and I don't even know what happened there. I kind of forgot. And then wasn't there a four?
Never saw three.
No, there was a TV series.
Right. The TV series was essentially four. And TV series was like, what was it like? It's like the Hercules series or something. Very similar to those syndicated.
Very much.
You know,
Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah.
Lambert always reminds me of Kevin Sorbo. They always kind of...
Kind of, yeah, a little bit.
Not kind of,
except their accents. For me. Except that weird-ass accent.
Here's the final thing for me on, you know, who looked good and whatnot in the film.
Yeah.
The entire film is ruined by the very first scene because the best-looking people in the film are the Fabulous Freebirds, Jumping Jim Brunzel, and the Tonga Kid. Yeah, the Tonga Kid is the one of the first people you see in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so forgettable, too, because I was watching it, and I was like, I do not remember any wrestling in the beginning of this movie.
Thing. It's like, why is the wrestling? Is one of the guys a wrestler? Is one of the Immortals a wrestler? I can't.
I was doing the same thing. I was trying to get my head around it, and and those guys are just fabulous looking, right?
And watching watching this thing for the first time in 20 years at least, my brain was wrenched back to 1986, and I got to thinking about how big wrestling was very suddenly on TV. And it made sense that a movie would come along and try to just grab a little bit of that zeitgeist.
Oh, right. Because it's completely not connected to the story.
Oh, not at all. But the
other than
Freebirds
the only thing that was really connected to was the character was drawn to battle. And he was totally offended by the mockery of it.
Right.
That was the only thing I even caught even a little bit. And they mentioned it just briefly, but it was not comfortable.
It gets you wondering instantly. He obviously isn't there to watch wrestling. He's there for something else. He's got an appointment downstairs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it got you wondering about how these guys come together. Like, did they have some sort of sixth sense that draws them together?
It's like a weird radar or something.
They do is called the Quickening. People, did you watch the movie?
Quickening just means life. It just means the bringing about of life.
Sean Connery, they hear the heartbeat of the deer, and then they run, and they both jump into the pool, and they skinny dip together and make love. That's all they have to say.
Well, I mean, there's probably some version of this. Like in Highlander Land, it seems like the Quickening was more of like, oh, you're doubled over with gut pain, and the lightning is starting to happen, and that's when he said, oh, you're feeling the Quickening, my boy, or whatever the hell he said.
Yeah.
You know, that was not fair. Randy, I'd like to apologize.
No. I'm saying
this movie made me very angry.
What I'm saying is that there's clearly something that draws them together, but it's really badly developed. Mm-hmm. They never get to understand an understanding for the audience of what it is that brings them together. And if it's strong, why it takes them hundreds of years to find each other. And if it's weak, why they aren't scattered out all over the world. Like one of them's living in Mexico City. No one will ever find them. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, the fact that they all find each other within the space of about a week.
Yeah, you know, right?
After thousands of years.
Well, you got to wonder. So, like, all right, so Clancy Brown's character kind of got foiled early.
Ah, Clancy.
And I love Clancy Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, I love him. And by the way, he can't say anything without me thinking of Mr. Krabs on
yeah, exactly.
Because he plays that voice. Yeah.
He does, and he's fantastic.
But this whole film, he's made to look like a freak, right? Mm-hmm. So in as a result, you're thinking of his character in Shawshank Redemption, the entire movie.
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, yeah. But he was young, and he was big. And he'd say things like,
"Tonight you sleep in hell."
And he would do that guttural, like, post-neck slice voice.
SpongeBob.
Anybody, voice that sounds like it hurts.
Yeah. Did anybody catch a reason why these guys all heal except the scar on his neck?
Oh, that's a really good point.
I called him Scar Neck the whole movie.
That's their Achilles heel, man. You mess the neck up, they die. Yeah,
if you cut their arm off, they just have to staple it back on and it heals.
Yeah.
But pretty much. What happens if you cut their arm off over a fire? Well, anyway.
Yeah, see, you could keep going. You could keep going. I mean, that's the problem. You're right. This weird attraction to each other. How do they find each other? I mean, Sean Connery out, you know, dancing around in a stupid red, whatever that was. How he somehow figured out his pimp suit. That in the Scottish Highlands, this dude out in the middle of nowhere, who nobody knows where he's gone. Clearly, his village doesn't know how to find him. Yet he does. So you're right. There's an implication that there's something else going on. Now, I never saw the TV show. I actually heard it was pretty good. I heard good things about it. But because I've never seen it, my guess is they explain a bunch of that. So we're going to have listeners who are like, I watched every episode. I have it on Blu-ray. You guys are dumbasses. That's fine. Except I'm really genuinely interested if some of this lore or lack of lore is explained in the TV show. Like, maybe they get into that.
I think it's explained, I think it's a good start
or it's come up with for the TV show. Oh. You know,
it's like, invented. It's retconned for the TV show. Right, and this movie desperately needed it. Like, this guy doesn't know he's immortal until he gets out on this field of battle at the very first time and he gets stabbed pretty badly.
Yeah.
And then in this strange WTF moment, Kurgan gets just dragged off by a couple of people.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And
oh, I guess I can't get you now. Okay, bye.
See you next time. Yeah.
And then Connor McLeod slowly comes to find out that he's immortal. Now, wait a minute. So immortality isn't made. It's something you're born with. Is that what we're being told?
Yes. Yeah.
And if so, then immortals should be made every now and then throughout all of history. So there's a never-ending supply of them, right?
And when what is the age you hit? Because Sean Connery, clearly a little older than 25 or whatever.
When he hit his immortality. Imagine how awful would it be to hit your immortality at like age 4 or at 94.
Yeah. And he said that. He says at the very end of the movie, he talks about, you know, there's a constant influx, I guess, of new blood. That's one of the statements
that
makes it very
The whole point of the film makes no sense. Yeah. The whole point of the film is there can be only one. If there's a new one about to be born and find out 15 years from now that he's immortal, then there can't only be one. There's a never ending supply.
This thing,
there can be only one.
That starts to seem real shallow when there can only be 50 more, you know?
Right.
And then they're all going to find each other somehow magically. And then some of them are going to teach each other, even though they may have to fight each other eventually. You know, thank goodness he got his head hacked off on the top of the staircase that somehow magically hovered above ground for a long time, because he would have still had to eventually fight McLeod. And nobody wants Connery fighting McLeod. So, yeah, there's a bunch of plot holes.
And that's weird, by the way, the scene where Ramirez gets killed by Kurgan, because the whole scene, Ramirez has the advantage. He has the upper ground. He has the better sword, blah, 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 blah. And then at the very end, he somehow just decides that he's done fighting. Right. He's like, Obi-Wan's his way right out of it. Right.
Yeah. He's insane.
Who, the Connery character?
Ramirez. Yes. Ramirez is insane. That explains it.
That makes sense. But it's my one lingering, most powerful memory of the movie. I kind of had, anytime there was beheadings in movies when I was young, had really strong memories of that.
Yeah, like, right.
You know, I'd carry it with me forever. So when I saw that scene again, I went, oh, yeah, let's just dig up that memory. But then it's much easier now because you're kind of like, that's kind of cheesy and looks dumb and kind of fake.
Pretty really?
Fake. Yeah, super fake. Especially while, you know, animated lightning's going everywhere and all I can think of is, you know, Disney had a hand in this or something. I can't stand.
Well, lightning that travels across a tire, pops the hubcap off, and then...
Right. Right. And it was it's an 80s thing. Like, yes. We need lightning. Draw it. Hand draw it. Get those guys, get those artists in here. We need more drawn art for the freaking lightning effect. And it all looks bad now. All of it.
Yeah.
I mean, all of it. Like, even, I guess they spruced up the stuff in Return of the Jedi, but originally, that zapping that did, it looked like poop. You know, and Luke on the round, writhing around going, blue animated lightning is covering my body. That's terrible.
This movie had the worst.
It had some pretty bad stuff.
As bad as it's ever been.
Yeah. All right. So let me give you some trivia here. Clancy Brown nearly turned down the role of Kurgan, concerned that his allergy to makeup would prevent him from wearing the prosthetics required late in the film. Apparently he's super allergic to makeup and such.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No wonder he always looks so gnarly in movies.
That is really like a carpenter being allergic to sawdust. Like, totally. Why are you in this job?
Yeah, that is a little bit weird. Christopher Lambert spent time with the dialogue coach not enough Lambert. Time. Developing an accent, which he said should sound non-specifically foreign. And I say success. And he also carried that through exactly. every other movie he ever did.
Right, yeah. I wonder how much of it was, let's teach you to talk like this, or let's come up with the reason why you talk like this.
Right. So he's born in France. I looked this up. He was born in France, lived there till he was two. That's inconsequential. They moved to Sweden. So he's there for a bunch. He's 16. They move back to France. Sweden. He spends the rest of his late teens in France. So I think what we're hearing is a weird Swedish-French mix that's just
Odd. It's very French.
I think you mean Switzerland and...
What'd I say? Sweden? I meant Switzerland.
And it's so strange to me that this guy is depicted as living in Scotland for, who knows, 200 years? Let's just say 200 years.
No Scottish accent.
And he never gets the accent. Like, it wouldn't it have been cool if they had shifted him from some muddled accent as a kid to... a really powerfully Scottish accent being there for a long time.
Yeah, I think that would have been fine. But I don't think he can pull that off. You know, he just decided, I'm going to be Raiden in Mortal Kombat, and his name or his voice will be just like it was in The Highlander. Woo!
He actually sounded like Dolph Lundgren to me.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah, I think Dolph's gotten better. Like in The Expendables, you could actually hear what the hell he was saying. Just nice. He had just barely learned to speak English anyway when he took this role. The only other English-speaking film he had ever been a part of at that point was Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes, longest title ever for no reason, in which he spoke only a few words. So that's as much English as you got out of him then. And here's go ahead.
Wait, he got this role by playing Tarzan?
Yeah, sure.
That's how he got this role.
It's his eyes, dude. Ooh.
Can you imagine how many greater action actors could have stood in this role and made it a better film?
Oh, plenty. Yeah. I mean, I think he was pretty good in Tarzan and kind of fit that role. But in this, it could have been. Well, let's think who was working then.
Jeez. I would have. This would have been the perfect age for Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, he could have done it. What was he doing, though?
I don't know.
He wasn't even doing Agent Steel. He wasn't even doing that yet, I don't think, was he?
This would have been perfect for him. He was mid-20s, late-20s maybe. Oh,
yeah, he would have looked pretty good. I can't think of anybody else. I'll put Bruce Willis in there. I'd take that.
Smart. I was trying to think of somebody who was at least close to Scottish.
Hey, there can be only one.
Slurp my butt. All right. The opening voice is my favorite trivia. I hope it's true. Yes. The opening voiceover by Sean Connery has an echo effect, not because they intended it to have that, but because it was recorded in a bathroom. Nice. It was played for the producers over the phone, and they approved it because they could not discern the quality of the recording that way. They went ahead and approved it. He was done. He was out, and they used it. So he is in a John, dude.
A little bit of the director's commentary, like right at the very beginning, just to hear a little bit of it. So I was like, oh, wow, Russell Mulcahy actually doing a director's commentary. I'll talk a little bit. I do want to talk a little bit more about what else Russell Mulcahy is famous for, because we kind of glossed over it.
Yeah, we did.
They talk a little bit about how Sean Connery is in his Italian villa, and they say, he recorded this in his toilet. And it wasn't his toilet. It was his bathroom in his villa. Well, we don't even know if it was in his bathroom, but it sounded like it was in his bathroom.
Right.
So they say that at the very beginning, but I love the fact, I like it. I loved it right after they said recorded in his toilet.
It's awesome. And his toilet would be even better. I mean, in Britain, they just go, oh yes, in the toilet. But over here, we're like, right, in the toilet.
Right, that means the whole room is
right,
the toilet.
Yeah. Right.
All right. I've got an even better one.
Okay. What?
The ultimate. I realized they wouldn't know in 1986 that he would go on to be really awesome and famous, but Gerard Butler would have been perfect for this role.
Yeah. He's dead perfect
just
for this.
Perfect.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, well.
That's a match made in heaven. Oh, that he would have been, important in that era. Well, I mean, he would have been about that age. Well, no, he'd have been younger.
Maybe 20.
He's 44 or something, 45.
It would have been early, young for him.
Yeah.
The other person that came to mind that I would love to have seen in this role is Billy Connolly, and he would have been a little old for it.
He'd have been a hell of a lot more Scottish, that's for sure.
The comedian? Really? Interesting.
Yeah. He would have been a lot better, voice-wise. I can't see him necessarily in the seriousness of the role. Like the most serious thing I ever saw Billy Connolly do, I'm trying to think.
Oh, Last Samurai.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah. But he was still kind of
silly.
Billy Connolly, yeah.
I'm just saying. Christopher Lambert is so far away from what should have been. It's kind of this domino effect for me. I imagine a better cast in the lead, and then I imagine a better direction of that person that comes from them better knowing and understanding the role, and on and on and on.
Dunaway, pick an 80s actor you would have replaced Lambert with.
Just anyone. Van Damme, easily. I mean, you fit right in there. You've got the bad accent.
As a Highlander Scottishman.
I don't know. That could have worked. Put some hair perfect on the guy. Yeah.
He would jump up. He'd do a couple of splits. He'd show his butt. I mean, it'd be perfect.
That's right. What was he doing? Like first, or he was doing like the thing where he put glass on his wrist. What was that?
Glass wrist.
No, movie. It's the fighter what? One. It's like Pit Fighter or something. What the hell is that movie called?
Oh yeah, yeah.
They wrap his hands in tape, and it's the outside of the tape, sticky side. So then they go over to a big bucket of glass. What's that called?
Yeah, what's
wrong with me?
Oh my god!
It's one of his more famous like early reasons he even exists.
Yeah.
And I can't think of it, so we'll move on. Too bad we have the internet or something.
I wonder if in 1986, if Brian Cox was
Bloodsport.
That's it.
Bloodsport.
I love yelling.
Brian Cox would be
that scared me. Yeah, if I wonder if he was young enough and thin enough. Like by the time he was Stryker in X-Men, he was old and fat. But I wonder if Brian Cox could have gotten this role. I guess he would have been about 40, though.
When you say Brian Cox, you have to yell it. Brian Cox!
So I notice I'm looking at some of his previous work. He directed a lot of Duran Duran videos.
Yeah, this guy was
music. Guy.
Russell Mulcahy was quite the MTV. Like you look at those early days of MTV, and 80% of the videos they were playing in that first time period were Russell Mulcahy videos. He did all the Duran Duran stuff. He did all the Elton John stuff right around that time. He did the very first video ever played on MTV, which was, as everybody knows, Video Killed the Radio Star.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He's
that's cool.
He's done a ton of these, and you look at his list: Billy Joel's Allentown, Betty Davis Eyes,
wow,
by Kim Carnes, a lot of Fleetwood Mac stuff. So
there
was all that stuff.
Yeah,
and he is still working.
He's doing that Teen Wolf show that's on right now.
Right. And he did that Bulletproof movie with Gina Davis. Was it Bulletproof? Not Bulletproof.
Oh,
it was a movie with Gina Davis and Samuel Jackson.
No, it wasn't Samuel Jackson. Along Came a Spider, Kiss the Girls. What is it?
No.
Wait, what year? What era are we talking?
We're talking late
80s. I know what you're talking about. I got it.
Gina
Hold
Davis,
on a second.
She remembers that she's a
the real McCoy.
Like a,
no, you're stupid.
Oh my gosh,
God, what was it?
Resurrection.
No,
Ricochet.
It's Tootsie. No, that's not it.
Scott's just naming all of his movies.
On the beach. Ricochet sounds kind of familiar.
No, the long kiss goodnight.
Oh,
so that's it. Well, the long kiss goodnight. Yes,
okay. I told you it was something with kiss in it.
You're absolutely right.
You're right about that. All right, so a bunch of Human League stuff too. I was a big fan of the Human League.
Mm. Although now that you're saying Long Kiss Goodnight, I'm not seeing that in his.
Yeah, I don't see that here. I don't know what you're talking about.
I think I'm thinking of Ricochet. Does that have Gina Davis in it?
I don't know. Ricochet sounds familiar. Denzel
Washington, John Lithgow, and Ice-T. No, okay.
This is one of those films where I don't want to give all the credit or take all the credit away from the director.
Yeah.
Because like, if you watch the credits, one of the they obviously the first thing they credit for some reason is the music, but the very next thing they credit when the credits start rolling is the second director and second unit stuff.
Yeah.
And it's kind of strange to have it up above the cast list, the full cast list.
That's because the second we're doing all the cool stuff over in Ireland.
Exactly. Mm. In Scotland. They're,
Scotland,
they're,
sorry.
Clearly, the cinematographer was and by the way, the cinematographer was named Jerry Fisher. Clearly, the cinematographer was hanging out with the second director. It was just like no doubt that Mulcahy was hanging out with his principals in a warehouse. And the really great stuff in the film, these shots of the Scottish Highlands.
Yeah, those are neat.
Somebody else got them.
They look separate, like totally different film.
They do, yeah.
In a way that's, you know, entirely noticeable. And the movie's such a flashback story anyway. It really relies on those scenes. And I am happy to report most of that stuff holds up, you know, pretty
good. Yeah, and it was interesting to see one of those battle scenes in pre-CGI stuff. Because everything we see now with battle scenes is totally build out with, you know, computer generated people, and it's a totally different world. Totally
the big battles on the battlefield stuff, like where they were attacking each other. Yeah. That's true. Those were kind of, you know, bad also in their own right though, because they had a lot of extras looking like they didn't know what they were doing.
That's because
This is something I couldn't wait to talk to Brian Dunaway about. This film has one of the best sets I've ever seen, which is the house that he and his wife in the Middle Ages live in Scotland. Yeah. Mm. The house is made of stone, and somehow they used like dirt mortar so they could get moss to grow on all over all the stones, and then they just tear it down. Mm-hmm. And instead of, you know, nowadays where you would have it be constructed inside a studio and it would be torn down by computer, they just do it the old fashioned way in this film. And yeah. I thought that was so cool. It was way unrealistic, but it was so cool.
Like you'd hit the side of the wall and you'd see it kind of bulging, and
that was kind of a love hate relationship. Like this whole movie was like that. It's like you go, oh yeah, that was cool. Way it's fallen away, but it was not cool when he hit the bricks and they kind of like it looked like something out of Sesame Street or something. I don't know.
Three guys named Lou, Phil, and Frank are behind there trying to get their cue right to pull it. Yeah, I see some of that. I'm kind of with you. I think that stuff's great. Like I just okay. So let's get to the brass tacks here. I feel like the movie is kind of awesome in a lot of ways. I think the concept still is really great. I think it's one of the best concepts in the history of action films. I really believe that. It's just a great idea. Now, Randy's right. They don't flesh out a lot of the, well, how the hell do they find each other? And, you know, how does this really work and all that? I can kind of forgive it because at the core of it, and in better hands perhaps, the idea of a few immortals that are with us now that can go back and tell us stories of time before, you know, thousands of years ago or whatever, is really cool, and that still kind of holds up as a concept for me, and I wouldn't mind. Honestly, I believe, and I think I said it last week, mark my words, this movie remake is coming. I smell it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's already in the works.
Is it? Because I couldn't find anything on it.
I did, and they got the funding for it in 2008. They originally said they were going to get a remake out in 2011, and they're now saying 2014.
Okay, well, bring it, because that sounds fun to me. I will watch that.
That is all
concept and improve the technology.
That is all referenced, by the way, at the bottom of the Wikipedia article for Highlander.
Oh, I never went there. So, yeah, it's just ripe for that. So, that's all great, and that holds up as a concept. But it's just not very good. I mean, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's got moments. I still think that the Clancy Brown's character is really menacing, and so, what's the word for a personality like that? He's so
dangerous.
Dangerous, but just doesn't care. Like, it really makes you go, yeah, you know, immortality could really jack you up.
Yeah, I actually felt this during his last scene where he's driving the car recklessly.
Yeah.
Yeah, running people over.
Right.
That was great. And they smack into the windshields, dude. Oh, man.
And it's done in such a cool way, too, visually, so that it's not so gory and gruesome. Right.
This is a really stupid way to express your immortality because you could accidentally behead yourself.
Right, in a car. That's what I kept thinking when he was going to try to juke and jive between those two semis. I thought to myself, no, Clancy, I've seen movies where dudes get beheaded in semis.
Oh, yeah.
Don't do always. That, you know?
Right.
Like Smokey and the Bandit almost got beheaded. Well, the cops did. Remember that? Because they shaved the whole top of the thing, and if they hadn't ducked.
Right under the semi, yeah.
So don't just be careful. And then, you know, he just has this. It's not apathetic. What's the word I'm looking for? He's just got this thing that's anarchistic. You know,
that's good.
Sure, yeah. And he just nothing. There's no right. There's no wrong. There just is, and it's just
he sees everybody else around him just as cattle. You know,
I love that. Yeah. He just really that again. So we're looking at pieces that really hold up. I totally felt like that did. And the idea that when he was this Black Knight character, he was all decked out in armor and all pissed and whatever. And in the future, because he's lived right along with everybody else, while Fancy Boy over there opened an antique shop, he decides to be this stereotype, at least in the 80s, of this heavy metal, half kind of goth looking, just pissed, don't send a hooker to his room or she's not coming out alive kind of guy.
But she does. She not only does she come out alive, she goes back.
Oh, that's true. That's
he
true.
He sees her more than once.
I love where he takes the guy with herpes on his lip and slams against the wall and says, I don't remember what. I like that whole thing. But he's really just, that's the best part of the movie for me is him.
Yeah.
And he really scared me as a kid. Like, I was genuinely freaked out by that guy. And I remember seeing Shawshank for the first time in the late 90s and went, oh, wait. that's dude with the neck cut, you know, like freaking out a little bit. Cause I didn't really know who Clancy Brown was as an actor, but, oh, and then I hated him and that's so bad. And then he was on Lost and I was kind of mad at him there too. And then he was Mr. Krabs and now I'm pissed at SpongeBob. Nah, he's just great. He holds up for me. Sorry, go ahead.
No.
Oh, you're done? Squidward. That was it? That's all you had?
Is it Squidward?
SpongeBob. I used to do a pretty good Squidward.
Ooh, SpongeBob.
I can't. That's not it. That's not it at all.
I can't. I was doing it earlier, but now I can't do it. I can't channel it. I can't.
Let's see. What's this? Oh, this is great. According to the director's commentary, the animated lightning on Connor's shoulders when he receives the prize, you know, gets the final... Mm-hmm. Whatever that big...
Yeah, which is getting eaten by a dragon.
The grand prize.
Yeah, yeah, getting eaten by cartoon dragons. Was actually supposed to disguise the wires. That's why they used all that electrical hoo-ha, but it actually drew attention to it. And, man, I sure saw those wires big time. They were right there.
I did, too.
Lights on them and everything. I'm like, dude, you guys, come on.
Right.
And also, I guess the film's climax was originally intended to take place atop the Statue of Liberty. This was then changed to an amusement park and then finally changed to the rooftop on the Silver Cup Studios building. I'm guessing budget or cost. Something or
sure,
probably, but it would have been actually cool.
It would have been cool to see it on the Statue of Liberty. Yeah. Wow.
You actually just reminded me of our first trope for this episode. You are badass if you wear a long coat.
Yeah, you are.
It makes it easier to disguise the wires when you get drawn up into the air and swung around in a warehouse.
Yeah.
Looks horrible with tennis shoes and a London fog trench coat.
Exactly.
The tennis shoes were great, dude. These these Nikes from 83 or something.
This is a guy who's had 400 years to use the power of compound interest to make himself very, very wealthy and walks around in bright white sneakers.
Yeah. Instead, he's a hoarder. You notice that? That's what he is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
He's not actually doing any of that interest, you know, working the markets, which is what I would do.
Well, work the markets and also maybe develop, I don't know, some sort of steel neckwear that you can kind of wear around as your...
Yes! Forget
the steel neckwear. They already did that at the beginning of Wild Wild West. In 400 years, why hasn't this guy invented a sword gun? A gun that fires swords?
Right.
How long would it take you to figure out a way to do that?
Yeah.
Buzzsaw blades, man. I mean, piece of cake.
Yeah, I've seen Octopussy. That can be done.
Right. Yeah.
Didn't that happen in that? I think it did.
And Sean Connery would have remembered that.
Just get one of those hats, like Oddjob hat.
The long coat trope is so tropey that I almost wonder if it's going away. Like if in these post-Firefly days, you can even get away with the long coat.
You know what? The long coat worked right up through Matrix time and then got super stigmatized because of the Matrix.
Stigmatized also because of the Columbine shootings.
Yeah.
The kids.
Yeah.
And they claimed that they were inspired by the Matrix stuff and that scene in the lobby and all that crap. So I think they fell out of favor because of that also. But so imagine the Highlander movie now. Will that dude wear a London Fog coat and sneakers? Will that happen? I say no.
I hope not.
And who's the guy? Who do we pick today? Forget about Bruce Willis or freaking Gerard Butler back in the day. Who would you pick now? Actually, I might pick Gerard Butler now.
Zac Efron, definitely.
No, shut up.
Wow.
It's not Zach. It's no way it's him.
Totally Zac Efron.
Chris Hemsworth, maybe?
Or his brother Liam. Either those two guys. The Hemsworth guys.
The other morning, I went to breakfast and saw a guy who looked just like Chris Hemsworth.
Really?
And he looked like Chris Hemsworth would look on the screen. In real life, I'm sure that actor looks very skinny to you, right? Like all actors.
They all do, yep.
This guy was bulky. And, I mean, he was tall and huge and had that massive face. And the whole time I'm in this restaurant, I'm thinking, God, that guy's so big. Like, he's so much bigger than everybody else. And then he left, and I realized that was probably a professional football player.
Yeah,
like,
could have been.
I was probably in the presence of a pro athlete.
That's cool.
That's what I would like to see in a future Highlander.
You should have walked up and said, Mr. Thor, can I have your autograph? See what he did.
No, I'm saying I would like to see someone who's genuinely huge.
Yeah.
The next Highlander.
That's fine. But I feel like, I've seen Hemsworth with his shirt off in that Thor movie. Woo, man. I'm not, let me just say something real quick. I'm not gay, all right? But, that guy's built.
What's the old saying? Everything before the butt doesn't count?
Exactly. Right. He is a specimen, and I think he'd be all right in this role. I can't think of anybody else, though. And part of my problem is, I realize this. I don't want to speak for everybody here, but you guys tell me if you're any different. We're all kind of in the age range and generation of similar stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself losing touch with who the up and coming young action star people are, like the Taylor, what the hell?
Swift?
Taylor Lautners.
Kitch. Oh,
Kitch is all right because I'm an FNL fan. But I feel like there was.
Well, yeah, but he's also doing that John Carter thing.
Like the last couple of years, I feel like there's been a break where I have started to split off away from the up and coming teen to mid 20s action scene.
No, I don't think so. Like you know, you may not know the name Jason Momoa, but you've seen him.
Oh, I know him, yeah.
Well, yeah.
You know?
But see, that doesn't count because I was watching him on, you know, Stargate Atlantis for years, and I feel like that was before my split. I mean, like, right now. Like,
well, see, and I think that's it, too. I think it all has to do with what we watch, because I say Chris Hemsworth, well, okay, we saw Thor. I was going to say maybe Ryan Reynolds is another, you know, potential, but that's because he was just Green Lantern and Deadpool. You know, you think of these actors that just fit because it's the geek action that we're familiar with right now.
What I'm saying is you can't miss them. You can't miss Andrew Garfield if you're paying attention.
Oh,
I'm
the
not
new
seeing,
Spider-Man.
I'm not seeing a big I'm not seeing a string of action movies like there were during the 80s mm-hmm. and the 90s. Right. I mean, so I don't think we're seeing those actors because they're just going to different actors. And I don't think it's any one person right now.
That's a fair point. Maybe it's girls. Maybe I hear the name Vanessa Hudgens and I go, I shrug my shoulders and I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Like, I don't really know what she does other than she shows up on a lot of celebrity poopy kind of stuff.
You don't need to know who she is.
Like, well, you know what I mean though? Like maybe it's it isn't that you're right. But it makes a good point. The geeky stuff I'm going to be into no matter who takes the role. And so I'm going to be familiar with him and then go, oh yeah, he was great. And I hope he does it again.
But you don't have to watch High School Musical to know Vanessa Hudgens. You just have to watch something, and eventually she's going to jump into your frame of vision. Okay. Eventually.
You just have to see the internet.
That's true. She's a bad example, but like I look at things like – I'm trying to think of what was the equivalent – I know this is way off Highlander, but what was the equivalent of Justin Bieber when we were 16? What was that then? Was it
Judge Reinhold?
Justin Timberlake.
Right?
Leif Garrett.
Leif Garrett. But I mean, like, okay, well,
Sean Cassidy.
Okay, Sean. Well, see, that was before our time, kind of.
Wow, that's still I was about to say. Yeah.
Let's go with Patrick Dempsey for a minute. Here's a guy who was on the cover of some magazines you would have never seen if you weren't a teenage girl.
Yeah.
And Tiger Haim.
Okay. But I'm saying for 25 years, Patrick Dempsey's agent has worked his ass off or her ass off to get Patrick Dempsey to be a sex star. And that's basically what he is now, you know?
What he is now, but he wasn't back then. I mean,
right. But I'm saying you can't, eventually, if these people are going to have any staying power, they're going to be thrown in your face. You're going to know who they are.
Okay. Well, yeah. I don't know.
Like the Justin Bieber equivalent would have been a teenager who was, you know, was seen as the sex object for the 15 to 18 year old crowd. And I'm thinking like
Haim's
the Corys or
who I'm trying to think of anybody else. I mean, the girls are easy. Cause like, who are the mall girls that sang,
Tiffany. Debbie Gibson.
I think we're alone.
I think that's later for us though. I think that's like 88, 89.
Was it?
Yeah.
I kind of had a thing for Tiffany. I'm not going to lie.
Ricky Schroeder would have been, you know, Justin Bieber.
Even had Justin Bieber's hair. True.
Somebody pointed out today that if you do a morph timeline on Bieber all the way up to Newt Gingrich, that it's uncanny. that Bieber is young Gingrich. That's what everybody's saying. I saw that.
Well, weird.
And it's kind of, if you look at it, it's kind of true. It's really,
it's freaking me out. Yeah. I'm sad that you said that.
I know. Well, don't be, because neither of those two people are on my list of people I like. All right.
But my point, I think, is absolutely, you're going to see the young action stars just like you would see and hear the young music stars. You're either paying attention to the
go see their movies.
Right. Right. You're either paying attention to the whole thing and they're going to be thrown in your face, or you aren't.
Yeah.
You know?
I think
you're right. It's going to be like, we're going to be watching the Oscars, the award ceremonies, and in between the Jeremy Irons and the, you know, the whoever else is coming out to talk, it's going to be the new up and coming star of such and such, and That's how we're going to get exposed to them.
We live in an era where freaking, what's this, super bad, what's his fat?
Oh, Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill just got an Oscar nomination. We live in that time, ladies and gentlemen. So,
and by the way, Jonah Hill does not look like Jonah Hill.
No, he he does not. He looks like Newman after his surgery.
I was like, going to say, like Wayne Knight used
to. Yeah, like Wayne Knight.
Wayne Knight does now, actually.
And then, you know, Wayne Knight. Newman is Seinfeld. Those are all starting to fall out of favor with people who I consider to be, you know, contemporaries of mine who, I don't know. You guys are totally right. Your answer to my query is dead on, and I agree with it. I think it's just a feeling I have. And I think that's just about me. That's got nothing to do with reality. But this sense that, I don't know, you get older and you start going, man, these kids, what they're
I can't keep up with these new Beavers and Kutchers and,
and the Snoopy Poopy Poop Dog, all that stuff. All right.
And there's also a churn, you know, like the Sean William Scotts and Jason Biggses of 5 years ago get churned through, and then a couple of years ago you're hearing about Zach Galifianakis and Ryan Reynolds, and there's, you know, new people getting churned up all the time.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it all from a film sack eye, I just think about things that we would watch together in 10 years and laugh about. If Brian makes it that far, he drinks way too many monster drinks.
By the way, in honor of our film tonight, I am drinking Glenfiddich 18 year.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, wow.
Really enjoying it.
Not on the rocks, I'm hoping.
Diet Dr. Pepper.
Actually, I wanted to drink Glenmorangie because that's what the Highlander actually orders in a bar in this film. And that's what a good Scotsman would order, I think, nowadays, a Glenmorangie. But I managed to empty that bottle the other day and haven't replaced it yet.
So. Managed to. That's great. all right, I got a trope for you right here. Lady is on your trail and knows what's going on. There's always got to be somebody who's like, there's something up here, and starts digging around and faking stuff so she can. I do like the scene where he's digging through her apartment and sees the recorder
and the gun.
The gun and the cameras and all that crap.
The best scene in that whole investigation is the crazy 1986 future programming of the computer.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
That computer, oh my god,
that was amazing. And the screen, dude, I was like, that looks like a terminal at the freaking post office in 1998, not some supercomputer.
If you're listening to this episode and you're on the fence about watching this movie, watch the movie just for that one computer program.
It's pretty good. Where it determined the signature, that was amazing.
Yeah,
that looked very. I'll bet that was like an original Mac or something screen. I don't know. I don't know what they used. That was
still does the bloop 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 bloop. Bloop, bloop, bloop. As it moves the letters around like Atari 2600 of computers. Bloop, bloop,
bloop. That's a terrible sound effect. I hate it when computers make that sound. You just brought back so many weird memories. Like hearing it's like being in a crowded place and getting a smell hit you and going, it's 1985 and I'm in my mullet and I'm sitting in the back of my, you know, CRX or whatever. And you just did that to me with that sound. Right. Nice job.
No, thanks.
My dad's going, don't hit the no more games on the Apple II. Why, Dad? Because you're going to break the keyboard. He was so worried we were going to ruin that keyboard.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember that.
Ugh, my dad. All right. Let's see. What else? Another. Oh, here's one. Wise old man teaches you and then dies.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, man.
This film has it a few times.
Yeah, it does.
And then reappears in some type of post-dialogue at the end of the movie where we go back through and remember every scene that he was in.
Yep. Yeah.
This film has it a few times. My favorite non sequitur wise information right before death is the appearance of the Jivelander. That's right. Jivelander shows up in the middle of the film out of nowhere. We find out that he has been friends with Connor McLeod for over 100 years, right?
Yeah.
But never really felt the need to kill him. I don't need to kill you. You're my buddy. That's
great.
A different trope, by the way.
Yeah, that's a completely whole different trope.
We're natural enemies, but I'm not going to kill you because I've got to go stand against our common enemy.
Right.
At least he and Sean Connery's character talked about that. Like, you know, when the time comes for the quickening, you know, who's going to kill who? Or
time comes for the gathering, you mean?
Gathering. Yes. For Pete's sake, don't you understand the gathering? Oh, my.
When time comes for the convention.
Hey, you guys, I know I played this on TMS today, but I want the Film Sack listening audience to hear. We're talking about Sean Connery. I want you guys to hear. Game voice actor extraordinaire Liam O'Brien. He does a lot of TV stuff as well, but good friend of the show did this. I just want to play this real quick. I want you to realize how bad, everybody listening right now, how bad your Sean Connery impressions are. because Liam does it better than you. Listen to this.
I suddenly remembered my Charlemagne. Let my armies be the rocks and the trees and the birds in the sky. I should have sent it to the Marx Brothers.
Love it. This is the morning stream. Oh, whoops. Sorry. Playing a real
that
thing.
That is
now.
Awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah. You guys reminded me of it. I had to say it. And then also, I just want one last thing. So Jivelander meets with the Slappy over there, and they talk, yeah, and they're all good buddies, and I'm wearing crazy African clothes.
Should be
and
throwing a frisbee in the park is what they should be doing.
So 500 years later, they've known each other for 100 or whatever they knew each other for. But 2 minutes later, you're fighting in an alley with... Yeah, you know, Kirk. Mr. Krabs, and you're going to...
You've avoided him for 100 years at least.
Right. All this stuff coming together. And yeah, in a matter of days, all this stuff coming to a head. It feels really convenient.
And that's part of a crazy sequence of non sequitur characters that are introduced to this film. Like the crazy Vietnam vet with the Uzi who decides to pull up in a flaming chicken and jump out and shoot Kurgan. Right. Yep. Or the flashback scene to the colonial days when apparently Highlander used to get drunk and duel people just to let them stab him. And those people have, there's these characters that you actually get interested in right before cutting away and you're never going to see them again.
Yeah.
Right.
The guy, speaking of the guy with the gun, I don't know about you guys, but if I take, I don't know, a 12-inch broadsword to the gut and hang on it.
Yeah. Lifted up by it.
And then thrown with it.
Awesome.
And then you end up in a hospital with a tiny bandage around you with a little bit of bleedy freaking stain on it going, I can't even, I don't know what to, I mean, talking to those horrible Jersey cops. Mm-hmm.
That
joke.
That skinny Jersey cop was terrible too. Oh my gosh.
Which one? The bald one? Yeah.
No, the skinny one.
Oh, the one that, little, yeah, I got clips of him.
When I kept giving him guff, you know, it's awesome.
I got some clips of that guff coming up.
They're actually right in the middle of what I think is the worst trope in the film.
Oh, but the worst?
Yeah.
What?
The worst trope in the film to me is the Shaggy Dog story of the cops. They only exist as a means to tell the backstory of the film. Mm. They're doing this investigation poorly, by the way, completely missing the most important mystery that they could be trying to solve, which is what destroyed all those cars under Madison Square Garden? Oh, yeah. My gosh. Yeah. They completely ignore that amazing mystery.
Yeah,
they're busy trying to track down who this guy is, Nash guy is. Mm-hmm. But their only purpose is to act as a Shaggy Dog story. And then when you finally get the whole backstory told, would just go on to something else.
Yeah, but they do it like this. Oh, give me somebody, go get me a burger. I mean, they're just like these the worst stereotype Jersey cops ever. They're just sitting around complaining about everything. Yo, you see what happened yesterday in the papers? It's like, come on, you guys.
Yeah, it was.
Go out and do some detective work, you bunch of slacker asses.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
All right.
I was offended.
Were you? You were highly offended. Yeah. All right. I'm slightly offended.
Oh, I have another trope that bugs that.
What?
When you finally find out just what's at the bottom of all this, you fall in love and make love and have sexy time.
Yeah, you do.
Wow. What's up with that? Was that a real thing? Did people actually think you could do that in movies?
I don't think that's... In fact, it's even worse than that, dude. You didn't even get to the main point of that, which is she's over in his place where he keeps all his pack rat house,
his horde
palace, and he's in there showing her all the stuff, and she does that convenient walk around the room so the camera can have a good angle thing, and then they come over in the middle of it, and he hands her the knife, stabs himself, jerks her hand into his heart, which I think he could have accomplished doing it himself. He had to traumatize her by doing it. Right. Stabs into his heart, pulls it out, shows her that he's not dead, that he isn't going to die. And that is the biggest turn on she's ever seen in her life. And she starts making out with, you know, dreamy eyes.
You must now make love outside in the darkness.
Yeah. And then all I could think of was, ooh, it's like a third grade teacher getting it on with a dude. She's gross. I didn't like her at all. I thought she was not attractive. Just saying. She's like a third grade teacher.
I hate that trope.
You can't settle down. You're not going to get to go to recess if you don't read your... She looked like a teacher the whole time.
Right. I've seen worse looking love interests in films.
You can name other movies, right, where this happens?
Oh, like, all the time.
The Tim Burton Batman, when Vicki Vale has absolutely no reason to be interested in Bruce Wayne until she's shown the Batcave, and then she's all over him
no
reason?
Because the Batcave looks like a vagina. But also...
Well, women are shallow.
But also, no, there's another one like that. Top Gun was like that. That whole scene is about...
Twilight is a perfect example of that.
What do you mean?
Ooh, ooh, you're sparkly and you're a vampire. I love you. Whatever. Shut up. Yeah.
Here's a strange one. In How to Train Your Dragon, the character Astrid absolutely hates the main character.
All right.
Until she finds out that he's got a dragon, and she's like, oh my gosh, you're my boyfriend.
Yeah, that totally. You're right. It doesn't stop with just adult, you know, Highlander movies. It spans the gamut. It's rated G to rated freaking NC-17 all the way. And they all do it. It's like they fight and they fight and they slap and they slap and then they're making out. That happens all the time.
But only when you find out what the big secret is. Oh, then sure. Make love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, in the dark, in silhouette form, just like in Top Gun,
where we can use body doubles. Thank you very much.
Breath away. All right, I promise not to do that again. All right. Let's see. What was the other? There was something else I was going to ask about. Oh, okay. My last note I had was the lady who he grew old with.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the worst makeup ever. Heather. She didn't look old.
Yes, as an old woman.
Bad.
She did not look old at all.
I mean, I know we didn't have Benjamin Button tech back then, but we had better stuff than that.
Something. Yeah.
What? Just get a different actress.
Yeah, yeah. Put an old lady in there. That's a great idea. Except sometimes that throws me off.
I wouldn't have bought that. Yeah, but I wouldn't have bought that at all.
I would have loved it, though. Some actual, like, 80-year-old woman in a bed going,
kiss me, Lambert.
Kiss me. Tell me dirty stories with that weird-ass accent.
And give me some tongue.
Wow, we have made a better movie in a few short minutes. All right. Let's do clips. What do you guys say? Clips?
Yeah.
Yay. All right. I love the clips from this movie.
All right, let's get to some clips. I got a bunch, and they begin. Oh, you know, probably ought to be in the right place for it. I was looking at that Sean Connery thing. Okay, here we go. Here is the Connery intro in the bathroom.
From the dawn of time we came, moving silently down through the centuries, living many secret lives, struggling to reach the time of the gathering, when the few who remain will battle to the last. No one has ever known we were among you. Until now.
Who's he talking about? The lady?
All I can hear is bathroom.
I know. It's too bad you didn't have a flush sound effect that you could play at the end of that.
Anyway, shut that off, damn it. I'm recording this. So you understand, I've lost my car keys.
I don't know. There's something
Honey,
weird.
Do we have any more toilet paper?
Listen here. I need a wipe, Indiana, let it go. Right. Sorry. See, I'm telling you, now once Liam O'Brien did his thing, forget it. All right, here's a funny grunt early in the film. It's very short. It's like a second, but I like it. There you go.
Well, that's a Schwarzenegger grunt there.
I like it. Yeah. I like things like that. All right, Clan MacLeod. Let's learn about Clan MacLeod.
In this year of our Lord, 1536... bring victory to the Clan MacLeod! MacLeod!
Oh, you know who turned on him real quick? Was that blonde lady there.
Everybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, well, everybody did. But I mean that the woman that's like, you bring him back in one piece. I love him, blah, blah, blah. He's a devil! Kill him!
I know. It was like such a turn. You got, come on, you bunch of superstitious crazy people.
Wouldn't you hate to live during that time? I mean, you end up surviving some horrible tragedy, and it's like, you're the devil!
Yeah.
Yeah. What's up with that? Like, can you imagine anyone you're related to that if they almost died and you found out they didn't die, you would then want to kill them?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, not now, but you know, it's like during the 13th century for sure.
Yeah. Was that what it was? 15th, 13th? What was it? I don't remember.
It's like 12 something, wasn't it?
Was it?
When he was originally, yeah.
I don't know. All I know for sure is that they just seem to turn on a dime. And I don't know. Why wouldn't you at least go, oh, it's so great to have you back, but man, we got some real concerns about how this all worked out. And, you know what I mean? Like, just have some, I don't know. Right. Am I asking too much of humanity? Or
do you feel different? Do you feel like maybe there's some devil in you? No? Okay. All right. Good. Can I buy you a drink?
We've been lifelong friends, so I guess we're cool. We cool? We're cool. Okay. You're alive. Whatever. All right.
At least throw him in the water, see if he floats.
Here is Clancy speaking for the first time, I believe.
Remember our agreement, Murdoch. The boy is mine.
Are you lying to me about this money, Dufresne? Because if you are, I'll throw you off this building, Dufresne. Because that was before he got his neck cut, right?
Yeah.
I think. And then
that should have been pre-neck cut.
Someone yells this.
There can be only one.
I think that's still before he got cut.
There can be only one.
That was before he got cut. And then he gets Stabby McStabby onto Lambert, and he lays on the ground and he makes these sounds. Oh, oh, oh.
Owie, owie.
Okay, what else? You talk funny. Oh, this is that. So here's the skinny cop. You like this guy? Dunaway.
That guy annoyed the crap out of me.
Yeah, he was horrible. And here he is.
You talk funny, Nash. Where are you from?
Lots of different places.
Lots of, and that's true.
Yes,
yeah. Truly.
His accent definitely lets you know.
I'm from Mortal Kombat. You do talk funny. I'm from. Do you guys know he has what's that vision impairment called? Shoot, I forgot the name of it. For a guy with blindness? where his eyes are so striking, because he really does have striking eyes.
Yeah, he does.
He has terrible vision.
Show the bright lights on it any chance they get.
That maybe that's the problem, because now they're all messed up. I guess he has to wear some crazy glasses to even see. It's kind of sad.
He's just blind like I am. He's myopic.
He's myopic. That's it.
Yeah.
Now that's a thing with light or something, right?
No, it just means you're very, very nearsighted.
Oh, well, that's me then too. I have something in common with the Highlander.
You're myopic.
It's also important. I think we should mention for anyone new to the series. I don't think, at least the first movie, the Highlander part is just, they're talking about him. Mm-hmm. It's not that the Highlander is a thing you are. I remember growing up thinking, oh, a Highlander is someone who lives forever. Well, no.
No, he's just from the Scottish Highlands.
Yeah. He's literally a Highlander, a Scottish Highlander. Everyone's not a Highlander. I don't know why, as a kid. Anyway, I'm just throwing that out there in case anybody else is confused.
I totally did too. Every time. Yeah. Every time.
You kept calling it the Highlander, so that makes sense. Yeah. You thought it was just one. There's just one.
And it's a tendency to say it, to say the. I don't know. I don't know what my problem is. All right, here's that guy again, skinny guy. And you can't. Here's an example of, we talk about this on the show sometimes, something you could never do in a movie today. I don't think, anyway.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Or not as often.
Yes, you cannot do it.
I don't think you can as much, but here it is.
You're a faggot, Nash.
Why, Garfield? You're cruising for a piece of ass.
Are you be a cruising for a piece of ass?
I don't even know what that means, and I grew up here in the 80s.
Just go through my collection of stand-up comedy and listen to some of the stand-up comedy from the mid-80s. Mm. Or just watch the Eddie Murphy stuff, like Comedian or Raw.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's got all kinds of that.
Pretty
F-word,
common
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, big time.
And man, it makes you cringe, too, because it feels like this movie didn't need that at all.
Yep.
It didn't add anything to the film. They were going to end up getting in a tussle anyway, you know?
Yep.
You mean this film didn't need a faggot joke? I don't know, man.
Clearly, you can still let it fly on this show.
Brian Dunaway is brought to you by Island 808 Vodka. Island 808 Vodka, made from real Hawaiian pineapples, the way Brian Dunaway likes it.
Mm. Now back to the show. Here's one. It's a bad local news report. I call it bad because no one reads news like this. Someone hired somebody to do this. Check it out.
It also left a man's decapitated body lying on the floor next to his own severed head. A head which at this time has no name.
I know his name.
I love the way they're playing these screeching Queen guitars under that to try to help you not notice how bad it is.
Oh, we haven't even mentioned. Go ahead.
Yeah, on the Queen soundtrack. I think we're about to talk about the Queen soundtrack. Mm-hmm. The "Give Me the Prize" song actually contains dialogue from the movie. Contains that clip of the reporter.
Oh, really? Oh, it's so terrible. It's horrible.
Which means that Queen was very excited about being a part of this movie. Mm-hmm. Queen, really?
Listen, this is you're controversial, maybe, but one of the best things about the movie. I really like the Queen music.
Oh, Queen music is fantastic.
It's like they learned from their terrible soundtrack in that other movie.
Is that controversial? I think this movie would have been better with an orchestra throughout and the use of one Queen track.
I don't know, because
would have been no orchestra. This is the 80s. It would have all been synth music and it would have been hard.
Well, there was a bunch of orchestrated stuff, but what was the one, Queen song that's the most famous?
Who wants to live forever.
That one. Yeah. So that gets played some here and there, and then the moment where him and Flim Flam, the girl, whoever it was, are making out, or maybe it was the cop chick, whatever, they play that theme but orchestrated. I think it's super damn effective. I really like it. That's a great song anyway. I don't know. There's something about certain Queen songs just really get me, like way down deep. There's something about some of it. Some of it doesn't. Fat Bottom Girls, F off. You know, yeah. That's dumb. Bicycle, dumb. just about everything else, kind of awesome. And where I feel like the sound of those guys ruined, what's the other movie? Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon.
I had to hear the song to say the name. But that was kind of bad in that, I thought, and wasn't really appropriate and weird. And then here, I really liked it, even though it was set, you know, sometimes they would show it in old Scottish stuff and whatever, but I really liked it.
Yeah, I think it means that we're going to have to review or film sack Iron Eagle at some point, because that's the other. Yes. When I think of Queen soundtracks, that's the third. That's the triptych. The
trifecta? Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
The holy trinity of Queen soundtracks. Yep, I have not. Exactly. I don't think I have seen Iron Eagle in so long I'd forgotten that was even the case.
I've never seen Iron Eagle.
Oh, my gosh. Just had that song.
That's in there.
I saw Top Gun. Did I need to see Iron Eagle too? Come on.
Well, where are you gonna get your Lou Gossett intake?
Junior?
You know? Yeah, Junior. I knew it was Junior.
Officer and a Gentleman, I was fine.
Because we're Senior. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
We got our Lou Gossett,
Junior
vitamins when we saw Jaws 3D. He was in that.
I just want to be clear. I love Queen. I think Brian May is the greatest guitar player that's ever lived. Freddie Mercury is the biggest voice you can put into a song. I felt like there was too much Queen in this film, is all I'm saying. I felt like the film was looking for places to stick some Queen. Let's have some people drive a car just so we can play some Queen on the tape deck. And I just could have done without.
Yeah, the movie kind of did pretend that in Highlander world, it's Queen, all Queen all the time.
You know what? Then, Randy, I don't think you like Queen as much as you say you do, if you feel that way.
That's what I'm thinking.
There's never enough Queen.
But I love it. And maybe it's just the nostalgia. I mean, you know, again, I also grew up with Queen, listening to that stuff all the time. So hearing in the film, I have no problem with
it. It's my most memorable album cover of all time is that Queen album cover with the big robot hand with the blood on the finger.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Bloodfinger.
Bloodfinger.
It's the one with We Are the Champions. News of the World. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that album cover. To this day, it is striking. It inspires the artist in me. Like, I wanted to draw when I'd see that album cover.
I've got News of the World on vinyl. It's a 1977 pressing. And if you look at the album up close, We Are the Champions and We Will Rock You, you can see those tracks have been played 1,000 times. And the rest of the album, not so much.
Yeah.
Randy is a hoarder.
Oh, my gosh.
He's got a dead cat under that.
Kill me.
The first two tracks on side one look all clean.
Here is a line about being in league with Lucifer. I think this was... Oh, this yeah, this is
early on.
This is people flipping out.
He's in league with Lucifer.
I like that.
Lucifer.
All right, here is some of the music from the film. Some sweeping stuff that happened in Scotland. Feels like it's like the Miramax logo or something.
Yeah, a horse galloping towards you, and it's going to tell you
the
production company of the film you're about to watch.
All right, here's I wrote weird sexy time.
Okay,
I don't know why. All right, I'll play it.
I like it.
Oh, it's basically like the Rob Roy scene in this movie. So hold on, here it is.
Will you, Connor?
I blossom. I will.
I blossom. I will try to. This is the only attempt he made at a Scottish accent. Was right then. Where he says, I will.
Will you, Connor?
I blossom. I will.
I will. I will.
He sucks.
There were some spots in this film where I thought they might have used somebody else's voice, and that was one of them.
Yeah, probably. It's he sucks, kind of. Whatever. I think he looks cool. Sounds terrible. All right, Connor re-enters the scene.
I am Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, chief metallurgist to King Charles V of Spain, and I'm at your service.
And I talk with a better Scottish accent than you do.
Awful.
I'm not from all over, even though I'm Egyptian. What?
In the Egyptian part, it's like, okay, sure.
What was that all about?
Why? Yeah. Why did that need to be there?
I don't know. That was a weird move on everyone's part.
Why isn't he? I don't get it. Why isn't he playing a Scot? It just makes no sense.
Yeah, why not do that? It would actually, you know what, it would help support your problem with the how do these guys find each other problem.
Well, but then it would seem like, oh, yeah, they all came from Scotland because the Kurgan's there and Sean Connery's there and Connor's there. And then you've got, you know, Jive Lander.
They had to explain that outfit, and Egypt was the only place that you could get that.
You know what? Jive Lander continues every time I hear it to be a more important word in my vernacular, and I'm going to use it from now on.
I'm glad you like it.
I really like it, Randy. That is a fantastic usage.
That, by the way, may be the best performance in the film, that actor. I hope you captured anything.
I don't remember if I did. We'll see here as I keep going. But I did notice that Lambert, you know, he's making out with his lady, and then he goes all rough husband on her right here.
Do as I say, woman.
Do as I say, woman. Jeez.
Oh, as I say, woman.
A minute ago, you were calling her, what were you calling her? Flower or whatever the hell it was?
Baby.
Hold on.
Will you, Connor?
I blossom.
I blossom. And then he went from that to...
Do as I say, woman.
Do as I say, woman.
Wow.
It's the quickening, damn it. All right. What he don't like. What? All right.
I don't like boats. I don't like water. I'm a man, not a fish.
I forgot about that. That was during the training.
The fish was sounded a little Irish, a little bit.
I'm a doctor, not an escalator.
Did I tell you? Well, I don't think I said on the show, but there was a piece of trivia that said that him and Connery struck up like a real friendship that continues to this day, like a real serious friendship.
Wow, really?
Yeah, that they still hang out and they'll call each other all the time and they spend some holiday stuff together. And that,
hey, Connery, remember that time was in that movie? Yeah, whatever.
But they say that, or they say this thing said that they still call each other by their character names.
Interesting.
So really? They still call, he calls him McLeod, and he calls him that other name, that long name, as a joke.
Better if he called him Haggis.
As a Haggis. Oh, I got a Haggis one. Let's see.
I'm a man, not a fish.
That's not, I never played that. Oh, here's another insult.
You look like a woman, you stupid Haggis.
There you go.
There you go. See?
What is Haggis?
Whoops. What is Haggis?
Yeah, there you go.
What is Haggis?
What is Haggis?
Did he call him a Bendejo one time?
Yeah, he did. He did. Mm-hmm. I didn't cap it because I was lazy, but he did. And he said it in the most Scottish way of pronouncing Bendejo.
It's so strange that you have a French-Swiss dude playing a Scot, and you have a Scottish dude playing an Egyptian Spaniard.
Do you feel like they did that to equalize it, to sort of say...
No, I feel like they have no idea what they were doing with the casting.
Mm. Yeah, it makes me wonder. It's weird. Also, Connery, is this still his paying the bills period? Must have been. Because why would you do this?
Right, the paying the bills period.
Yeah, you know, the Zardoz all the way up through.
Yeah. He was doing all right. Yeah,
this was before. I want to say this was before his last James Bond, the Never Say Never Again one. Mm-hmm. And that's when we had Old Bond. And then what else? What else? I mean, this was before Indiana Jones. So I think that this is like his period where no one cared about him. So he was like, I'll play this bit part, get my head cut off, and wear this dumb jumpsuit for money. And I'll record your thing in the bathroom. All right. Here is the fakest sneeze of all time ever captured in film. I really believe this is true. This is Sean Connery pretending to sneeze. Achoo. Oh, come on.
Wow. That was so bad.
He pronounced it. You can't pronounce it.
It's hard to think of. It's hard to believe that Sean Connery is this bad in this movie. Yeah.
That's so bad.
I did that one in my toilet too.
I just watched the movie and I'm sad and I don't believe how bad he was.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I love him. I'll watch him in anything really, but yeah, that's bad. You have the manners of a goat.
You have the manners of a goat.
You have a manner. Yeah, I love that. Let's have Liam read that.
An ill-mannered goat though, like not a good-mannered goat.
Let's see.
You have the manners.
Wrong one. I think this is it. No, it's not what I thought. I thought that was Sean Connery laughing. That's the Highlander laughing. I like laughs. Let's see. Great. Oh, we had a good screamer in this movie. This lady could scream.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, all the women could scream. They were all big screamers. And here is one. God, let that rip.
Right.
Awesome, dude.
Did I mention?
Let's see. Tonight you sleep in hell.
Tonight you sleep in hell.
Ooh. There can only be one.
There can be only one.
And better to burn out.
I have something to say. It's better to burn out than to fade away.
Oh, thank you, Neil Young.
That's right. Yeah.
Is that what that is? It's a line from a Neil Young song.
Neil Young yeah. said it first, then Def Leppard, then Kurgan.
Oh, that's the lineage yeah. of the line.
It's the lineage. Oh, and John Lennon Neil doesn't is... like that line or didn't yeah. like that line.
He didn't like it. Why?
That's the song, Hey, Hey, My, My?
Yeah. It's better yeah. burn out than to fade away.
And why?
Yeah.
Out why
of the blue into the gray.
Why wouldn't he like that, John Lennon?
John, because he felt like rock stars, you know, basically burning out is to go out with a bang. Like, oh yeah, Kurt Cobain used it in a suicide note too. That's more lineage for you.
Oh, weird.
But yeah, I mean, it was in the rock world, burning out was dying in an overdose or yeah. right, exactly. Going big and then going out, as opposed to being like Neil Young is now,
forgotten.
He's getting slightly, he's fading away slightly. I mean, come on, Neil Young.
I hugged Neil Young once. Because I thought it was my grandma. I was totally wrong. I'm like, Grandma, you're alive. I hugged her and she went,
I'm Neil Young.
Something, man. What's that song he sings? Something old man. Was it go? How's it go?
Old man, look at my life.
I'm look a lot at like my you. Life. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
If I'd have known that, that would have come off better. All right, moving on. Hello, pretty.
Hello, pretty.
Ooh. It's my new ringtone for my texting. Nice. By the way,
hello, pretty.
He did a pretty good job of the gravel voice of the Cookie Monster.
Yeah, he does so much voice work now. That guy's crazy busy with voice work.
Crazy,
not just SpongeBob either.
I love Brian Dunaway agreeing with you.
Hello, pretty.
Well, I think it's because he's tired and he's on Monster.
What?
Hello.
Are we still doing a show?
Oh, this is the yes. We are the last. There can only be one.
There can be only one.
Oh, you thought there was the last one? There is one more.
There can be only one.
Scott Fletcher has the last word. That's it for your clips. That leads us straight into what we like to call award season. It is, in fact, real award season. Yeah.
I would just like to point out that back when we used to do the checklist,
yeah.
this film would have blown down the doors the headings part of the checklist.
Right. Oh, headings, yeah. Obi-Wan Kenobi figure, black guy kind of dies first.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah. Sort of. Sort of. Black Highlander dies first.
Black.
Jivelander dies first is the new list. This movie would have fit well. I think there was probably even a cave that somewhat looked like a bajayjay.
Sure.
Let's do the awards, though. That's what we do now. The McLeod's hair holds up in both Scottish era and modern era award. I felt like he had pretty good hair.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Although the bangs were a bit much, but whatever. the Alfred the Butler Award goes to that lady he saved when she was a girl in World War II from the Nazi. Forgot to mention that.
Oh, that was another non sequitur, too. I was talking about all those scenes that are just strangely out of place.
You know, and they tried to make it all meaningful when she's going down the elevator or whatever, or he's going down, she's going up, whatever that was. And they try to make it like, oh, this friendship forged in, you know, Nazi Germany has continued this long and she's been so loyal. And I'm thinking, no, you just barely showed that to us. Like, I have nothing invested in this. I don't really care about her the way you want us to. That really bugged me. Screamer Lady Award goes to all the ladies in this film.
All the ladies.
Star Trek Awards include, this were appearances of people who were also in something Star Trek related, sent to us by Daryl. Edward Wiley played Garfield. I don't know who Garfield is. The cat.
Like Garfield the character? Yeah.
In TNG, played a Klingon. Governor Vach in the episode, season 4 episode, The Mind's Eye. Also in DS9, played Gul Toran in the season 2 episode of Profit and Loss. Clancy Brown was Victor Kruger in this movie. Also the Kurgan. The Kurgan. Victor Kruger the Kurgan. And he played, Zoe Brawl in Desert Crossing and Enterprise. So something relatively recent that none of us saw because Enterprise sucked. Soundtrack great. I'm going to give it K for kind of better than it should have been. Love the Queen stuff. It's pretty good.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, I like it.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the parts where you get to just throw your hair forward and rock out.
Well, now's your chance to throw your hair forward and rock out with a somewhat interesting Twitter post. 140 characters or less. You guys tell us what you think of the movie. Let's start with Randy. What do you have?
Highlander, a movie that features Sean Connery attempting a Scottish-Spanish-Egyptian accent while wearing a pimp hat and calling himself Juan Carlos Villalobos García Isázar Ramírez Jr. What could go wrong?
Wow.
Read more, was what that Twitter post said at the bottom.
Next up, Brian Dunaway.
Highlander, a 12-year-old dreams movie that dies a horrible death when he turned 13, except for the old lady on the car hood screaming. That is timeless.
I really did like how they did that.
Yeah. Oh, man, because she was all kinds of on the hood. Yeah. There was a stunt double. Yeah. I mean, the dress was flying over her head.
Yeah.
It was bad.
It reminded me of something. It reminded me of a movie where somebody smacks into a window for just a second and then gets thrown off, makes a face while they're there. Do you guys
I'm not going to lie. I could watch about like a 30 minutes of crazy voice guy with her and her and him making her feel uncomfortable. It's just a lot of fun.
Mom.
All right. And then finally, Brian Nibbett.
Well, Fletcher and Clips kind of stole this, but not stole it, but pre-did this. There can be, Highlander. There can be only one, and this ain't it.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, there's stuff about it that holds up, but most of it's kind of not great.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to, if they do a remake, I'm looking forward to them keeping the good stuff and improving on what needed to be improved.
What if they would go ahead and just stick Colin Farrell in there again? Because he's doing all the remakes.
Yeah,
now.
Pretty much. Total Recall, Fright Night.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep. And I heard Fright Night was good.
It's on my Netflix list. I haven't watched it yet, but
somebody said that remake is really good. Mm. It was on some list of the best movies you didn't
Colin
see.
Colin Farrell said that.
2011.
Yeah. No, you'll love this movie.
It made a bunch of best lists last year. I can't remember.
I'm interested. I wanted to see it at the theater. I just didn't get a chance to go see it. I was actually really interested in seeing it. Yeah. Love the first one.
Maybe we'll check it out and report here because we've seen the old one and you know, we did what we did there. All right. Well, here's what I learned while you made us all look at Sean Connery in a horrible red costume for a large portion of this film. The best way to get out of a parking garage fight is to flip backwards for about 20 times.
That was so funny. Yes,
cartwheeling dandy is what he was. What the heck was that?
Why would you want to get out of the fight then? Your job is to behead the other guy. Why are you backflipping?
Wasn't trying to get out of the fight. He was just trying to reposition himself.
Yeah, but why not? Just run over there then. Just run.
That was a terrible scene.
Look what I can do. Flip, 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 flip. That's stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I couldn't tell where they're supposed to be half the time anyway, because it was constantly moving. It was continuity was terrible.
All that Super McFlippity Backflip did to himself is get himself dizzy.
Yep. He did. What a waste of time that was. I also learned a fleet of American cars cannot stand up to the death effects of a Highlander.
Yeah.
Goodness. And they were all terrible old LTD looking like cheap.
Oh no! When he first walks in,
except for the mock,
when he walked in, yeah, that all looked great.
Yeah, and he ends up driving out some awesome little roadster. I forget what it was
that was unaffected by this power.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Excuse me. In Highlander world, there sure is an awful lot of Queen music. Also, nowhere we should go to work out our end of the world problems, Mr. Immortal. The freaking zoo. Let's go there on our little date. And then finally, Clancy Brown is still a badass, and that's what I learned.
Mm-hmm.
While Sean Connery looked like a fool. Let's play an email, or, you know, rather read one. This comes to us from Matt Blick, who may have the coolest name I've ever seen. Matt Blick says, Highlander is one of those films that I loved as a teen and then was just embarrassed by later in life. One of the things that really stuck out in my mind was having a French guy play a Scottish guy and a Scottish guy play a Spanish guy. I could believe my ears.
Or Egyptian. We don't know.
He says, I could believe my ears when Connery said I'm not Spanish. For a second, I thought we might get some clever backstory. But then he says, I'm Egyptian. It's weird, though, because they pull the same stunt in Hunt for Red October, where Jack Ryan says of Connery's character, he's not Russian, he's Lithuanian by birth. Unquote. I also remember the Steadicam and or aerial boxing shots were considered really state-of-the-art at the time.
That was really cool.
Love the show. Thanks, Matt Blick. Matt Blick.
But it wasn't boxing. It was the wrestling, right?
That's what you're talking about? He said boxing, but I think he meant wrestling, yeah. He said boxing. So he must have meant that. Yeah, that wrestling could have gone on for days. I was loving that.
The opening scene was really cool, though. I mean, when they do that shot where they run all the way around the outside, and because it's like a crane shot at first. Oh, it's a crane shot. But I'm like, no, this is going on forever.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. This is a camera on rails or something. I don't know.
It's weird.
I would say it's like cool. A remote control helicopter or something.
They used it again for the girl in the hoarder room too. They spun. It was like they couldn't get enough of the aerial shots. It was weird. Oh, and you know what? The shots outside where he's fighting on the rocks, that's pretty cool. That looked good.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's play some Quetcher. Some Fletcher quotes. What's it called? Quetchers.
Quetchers.
You want some quetchers?
I like it.
All right, here it is. I already played you one. Here's another one.
If your head comes away from your neck, it's over.
That's such good advice.
It really is.
I mean, it's universal. You don't have to be a Highlander or a Jivelander to get that. Yeah. Overdressed haggis.
For you, my Bonnie Heather. Happy birthday. And you, Juan Ramirez. Take care of her, you overdressed haggis.
What's this haggis?
Yeah, that's pretty good. And then I kept this.
You overdressed haggis.
I'll use that whenever I want.
It's so weird to hear Sean Connery then ask, what's haggis?
Yeah, well, no doubt.
Well,
yeah,
right.
You don't know, but this French dude does.
You're from Egypt. You've lived 500 years. You're now in Spain. You talk like a Scotsman. You know everything about there is to know about fighting a freaking whatever. You know what the quickening is? You'd never heard of haggis.
Weird.
That makes plenty of sense. Spanish peacock.
I can love and have children, live and grow old. You never prepared me for that, you Spanish peacock.
All right, so then I got to keep this.
You Spanish peacock.
I use that whenever I want. Thank you, Scott Fletcher, for those.
So the big reveal in this film, like the big secret, the prize that's referred to over and over, is you get to be mortal.
Mm-hmm.
That's the prize.
Which I think Kurgan would have been disappointed.
But you get to be mortal and you get to know everything.
No, that wasn't very well demonstrated. Like, it would have been awesome if he said to her, you know, now I know everything. And she had said, oh, really? What's the solution to Fermat's last theorem or something like that? you know, like, instead, it's just like, oh, what am I thinking?
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Describe the Turing test. All right. tonight, as I finish this film sack episode and I sneak into bed and my wife is half asleep, I'm going to lean over and whisper this in her ear.
Hello, pretty.
And then we're going to go to sleep. I would like to now announce to the world that our next film is 9 to 5, the Dolly Parton epic.
Oh my gosh, are you serious?
Yeah, the fantasy, the Dolly Parton fantasy epic, swords and sorcery. It's going to be fantastic.
I have heard that this
some
film,
kind of magic.
The only nine.
I've heard that this film, which is really entirely Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, and Dolly Parton, is pro marijuana.
Oh, I remember pot scenes. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But let's not forget: is this our second Dabney Coleman movie, or am I thinking that Lady Hawk should have had Dabney Coleman in it, and I was wrong?
I hope we've had Dabney Coleman on Film Sack multiple times.
Was he on War Games?
Yeah. Oh, War Games, right?
Yeah,
right. I think that may have been it, though.
I think so. Yeah,
he's no David Warner. In terms of showing up on this show. I'm looking forward to that because as a family, super into that when we were younger. Like, my mom loved it, watched it a bunch of times in the theater. My dad got it on VHS and we watched it a whole bunch at home. We thought it was one of those, it's like just one of those things you watch as a kid and everybody in the family likes it.
I've never seen 9 to 5. In fact, I couldn't have told you what it was, who starred in it. Before looking it up, before watching
weird.
This movie.
Yeah, we were really into it. I don't really remember a ton about it, but I remember if it was just a big deal for all of us to go, let's watch that again. And it's a bit like now with, you know, old episodes of Futurama with the kids or you know, they're really into Firefly movie, Serenity.
I had the same experience.
Do you watch it a lot when you were a kid?
That and Tootsie? Well, I didn't really watch it, but it was always on. My mom was always watching it.
Yeah.
So it was always on. So it's something we always watched.
Yeah, Tootsie was that way too. I like Tootsie. Bill Murray.
I think I remember me dragging my dad to see The Incredible Shrinking Woman over and over.
Oh, yeah.
Again, speaking of Lily Tomlin.
That's another
right
one.
Around that same time.
Yep.
I remember Honey, that. I'm worried about Ibbot. Little Ibbot. Worried
little,
about him.
Little Ibbot.
Little Ibbot.
He sure little likes Ibbot. That Shrinking Woman movie.
Yeah. What is about there?
What's going on with that boy? All right. Well, there you have it, folks.
I'm looking forward to 9 to 5.
Yeah, let's watch that and then get together again and do this.
Sweet.
I think that's the plan. 9 to 5 next week, we will find out what happened to all 9 rings of power that went to the kings of men.
Yeah.
And then how it got turned down to 5. Where are the others? We don't know where the other 4 are.
Scott Johnson, you're a strange bird.
It's the Doctor of Diet Pepper and my rewatching of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which I'm enjoying immensely.
And coming up on Film Sack after that, Red Planet Mars, Dirty Dancing. We're going to watch Dirty Dancing for whatever crazy reason.
If that's not the movie where he works at a roadhouse, I'm not interested. That's not the one?
No, it's the film where Film Sack is going to put Baby in a corner.
Okay, fine. Do you know that movie and Pink Flamingo, I get mixed up. I know that's weird. I know. It doesn't make any sense to me either. It's kind of like Dabney Coleman's in Lady Hawk. I don't know why I think that or thought that. That's the same kind of problem.
By the way, Red Planet Mars may be the oldest film we've ever watched on FilmSack. It's now 60 years old.
What year was the, when was it released? I can't do that.
1952, 60 years old.
So that would have predated Plan 9 by a couple of years.
A couple of years.
Oh, yeah, and the Fly, which was what, 58?
Yeah, the original Fly. Yeah, that was like 58. Yeah.
This is exciting, guys.
It is, isn't it? Let's do some more math. No, instead, I'll tell people where to go. Straight to hell. No. Go to the website. Filmsack.com is the website. You can find all of the links to all the previous episodes we've done, including subscription stuff to everything. If you're listening to this, chances are you already know that. So tell your friends and your family. Email us, filmsack@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, @FilmSack. And as always, we encourage you to leave us nice reviews on iTunes. We'd love to read your feedback. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Randy.
We'll see you next time.
There can be only one!
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.